Mr. Boyne, Rail 9. We were talking about when you changed tanks, you were with this new crew under a corporal, but you don't know, it wasn't Bush anymore, your previous one. And the tank had, someone had put antifreeze in the oil. Something had happened anyway. And you were replacing the engine. Now, this is before Goodwood, in that period leading up to.
That's right. This was the forming up. We moved from the orchard out, moving up through the dust to another holding area when we had this engine failure. Just that we picked the box, got the box up from the beach back onto the truck, and rejoin the workshop. By the time we got back, they got like a housing around the tank so they could then continue to work because it was starting getting dark. We uncrated the engine that we got from the beach, and they hoisted out. Eventually hoisted out the original engine from the vehicle. It was found then that a connecting rod had broken in the number one engine, because there were five sets of cylinders, and the broken conrod had broken through the cylinder wall, allowing then the oil and water to mix through the broken cylinder. In fact, the bits were laying at the bottom of the vehicle when we lifted the engine out. And that, I might add, is probably one of the only mechanical failures that I ever remember with the show. They were mechanically very good. So we worked all night, all during the hours of darkness, getting the other one in, get the engine in, run up, connect it up. Tested it, reloaded the ammunition, and then rejoined the unit. Now this must have been coming up to the area where the start line, near the start line, and waiting for a big aerial bombardment.
That sounds like it took place sort of on the night of the 16th, 17th, this replacement. Because they moved up to a field northeast of Ranville where the gliders had landed. I think that was just...
Right. Again, that must be about the time that we had a bottle of beer. An issue of a bottle of beer. And prior going into the army, I worked in the machine shop. There was a character that he had the nickname of Annie. He was a perpetual moaner, but his great quality was he could swear better than any sergeant major I ever met. And to the extent he could split words and put a swear word in the middle of them. So it was near the glider field where we formed up, because I remember going over the Pegasus Bridge and the airborne was still holding that. They were still on duty there, and they got a blackboard with the Pegasus chalk on it, Pegasus Bridge. So we formed up in the glider field around there, and it was there that a jeep came up alongside a hinge that we were up against, and I could hear this language the other side of the hedge moaning and groaning about their radio lines and telephone lines being damaged by the so-and-so tanks. And I recognised the voice, or the swearing, probably more than the voice. So I shouted out, "You don't shut up, I won't let you have a drop of my beer." And that promptly, he then popped over the head double quick, and sure enough, it was Annie. And he was in the airborne as a signal. And so away went half my beer, double quick, but nevertheless, it was nice to see a familiar face, I suppose, at that point. I think that was the night, or the morning, was the big air raids coming up and the barrage started.
What do you remember of? Because it was supposed to be a huge air raid and then a huge barrage. What do you remember of seeing them?
The cloud, the air raid was an enormous number of aircraft coming over in waves, virtually. And you were just thankful that they were yours and they were bombing somebody else, because it looked like a continuous wodge coming in. What damage they actually did, whether they achieved whatever they were trying to achieve, I really would like to say, but it wasn't for the weight of bombs. I mean, they dropped an enormous number. And I think, if I remember, there were five villages that they tried to hit, believing that that's where the concentration of the Germans were. But that wave, the aircraft stopped at a certain time, and then a artillery barrage started, and we started moving up behind this barrage. There was a runway embankment that I remember quite clearly, and we crossed it and into an open area, and then went down for leather towards the trees in the distance.
Now, there's supposed to have been a big problem with getting through the minefield, the British, I think, Allied minefield. Were you aware of any of that as wireless operator?
No, not a clue, no. I can clearly remember the railway line.
Was there any difficulty crossing railway lines? Was it in Sherman's, on embankments?
No, not really. We didn't go almost anything. And it was a big mound, actually. The railway line was sitting on quite a large mound. In fact, I imagine there must have been tunnels in places, but nevertheless, we crossed it. And there was this large, flat area which we started to roll over, spread out, going like flat out, as fast as the vehicles would go across this terrain. And I can clearly remember, from the operator's side, looking out, and there was a tank almost alongside us, and it had the .5 Browning that was sitting on the top of the turret. It used to stick it into the top, and the commander could let loose this .5 Browning. This tank was running parallel with us. Whose it was, I know not, but it sort of shattered as it was hit, and the impact was such that this Browning, as heavy as it was, flipped out of its spigot and disappeared over the side. The tank itself just shattered to a stop, and of course it disappeared out of sight. Obviously it was one of the early ones to get hit.
Were you under much fire during this early, up to the railway line and then after the...
After the railway line, it seemed it all happened from the trees that were in the distance. And then it all seemed that fire was coming from all places. The trees seemed to sort of house the 88s, the field guns, and... around the sides of them, there were panthers reported here, there, and everywhere. And it was an enormous sort of. It seemed that the radio was full of voices coming up, picking out targets. The barrage that was running in front of us limited our speed, I suppose, to some degree. It was. Obviously, infantry couldn't have caught up with that, the speed that we did move across it. But as the firing towards us intensified, we had to go faster to try and avoid it.
So you started running up to... It was a creeping barrage, was it?
It was a rolling barrage, yes, initially, I think. If I remember, that was the idea.
What sort of messages were you getting through the headphones?
You could hear Panthers sing to the left, and the 88 sitting within the tree, and people were just firing at will on the move, which is not the most accurate way of doing it, but yeah, I suppose you felt you were doing something.
Would you normally stop to fire?
Normally, yes. Because over background, the thing is flapping about, and you could be, you know, several feet above it or several feet below it. Even if you were on target, you were either below it or under it. So it would be better to stop and get...
And was your gun firing?
Yeah, we were firing at it. A lot... Within the trees, you could pump HE into it so that they got air bursts. And if it was an 88 crewed by, I don't know how many men crewed it, 7 or 8 or something like that, I imagine. But if you fired air bursts into the trees, that would at least keep their head down. It would give them something to think about rather than giving them the pleasure of firing at you. But when it came to Panthers and stuff like that, then HE was no use to you at all, in fact. And you needed to be something like 600 yards range to really do damage. Anything more than that, the shots would just skate straight off. And there's nothing worse than watching an accurate shot sort of hit and then just fly up in the air. I mean, but the radio was full of chatter from targets here, there and everywhere, so it would seem.
What was it like in the tank? I mean, you know.
Hot. Very, very hot. You're sweating because of the heat.
What was the noise like?
Very fierce. When the gun fired, of course, you've got this rock as the thing went off. The recoil, the hot shell case would come flying out the back and land on the floor. And as the operator, you had a little port at the side of the turret. You could open that and throw the empty shells out when the time permitted it. So otherwise, you were standing on it. You know, they're rolling about all over the floor. So when there was a little lull, that's what you were busy doing, trying to clear the floor. It was obviously, you got the engine noise, and with headphones on, you got the persistent cackle on the radio.
And you were still loading?
Yeah.
And so you'd be organising your shells around you?
That's right, yeah.
As you described that before. Yeah. Were you scared in these circumstances? I mean, or were you not aware what was happening?
You had to be aware of what was happening in as much that the radio told you that troops were coming up saying that we're down to two, somebody's just falling out. Yes, you have butterflies, certainly, I don't think you'd be human if you didn't, be honest. But that was only, you got your butterflies probably before or after. In the event, things happened so fast that you didn't really have time to sort of dwell on it. I suppose it comes to the point of almost survival. It is strange, really, but it is when they're suddenly low and you look round and...
Now, you were still in 3 Troop, you reckon?
Yes.
Of A Squadron. So still in his troop.
Yeah.
And they were, as far as I can see, they were on the right of the leading wave. Now, so you started to take casualties. You only saw the one tank so far.
Yeah.
You didn't see whether...
Running parallel with us, virtually.
That's the one you saw. You just saw. And you didn't see whether it it flamed or not?
Not at that point, no. We went out of sight. So we away.
So what happened next then?
Just general mayhem, you know. Really. It was either that day or if it continued, and it did continue on that day, but I think it must have been that day that we loosed off enough ammunition to start running low at one time during that day. And the corporal radioed up and said we were running low, and I imagine so were many of the others. What we were running low on, I can't honestly tell you, but I imagine it was armour piercing. And when we crossed the railway, there was a Canadian shell knocked out. It had been hit. It lost its front sprocket and track, the part of the track. So and it didn't burn. And we were, because we were low, we were told to go back and offload from this Canadian showroom, which was near the railway again, near that built-up bank. There was the open plain, there was cornfield and whatever in it. We went back to that Sherman and offloaded all the ammunition that we could, actually. So there we were, trotting about with armfuls of these shells, and we realised that whatever hit that Sherman had to come from the plane that you'd run up. So, I don't know, somebody hazarded a guess as to where the distance it was knocked out, and it was pretty phenomenal. But it was intact, fortunately, and we offloaded as much as we had and we could, and took some back, even surplus of what we had. But it was on the way back that you suddenly got the picture of the whole thing. It would seem that everything was alight. Wherever you looked, it was flame and smoke. There were vehicles, broke plumes of black smoke going up. And the ones, initially you got this fire, but the strange thing was when the fire died down, as the ammunition exploded, you used to get like a circle of smoke would come up, like a smoke ring as from a cigarette smoker. You'd get this come up out of the turret at sort of regular intervals. Strange sight. You've got all these vehicles burning. The corn in places was burning. The shrubbery in the trees, because we hit things there that their ammunition was going. And then you look at the smoke and flame. I might add, on the way back to that, we picked up a load of wounded that were struggling in the making their way back, and we dropped them off at the railway embankment.
That's when you were going back to the Canadian tank. You'd pick some casualties up
back.
On the back or inside.
On the back, they were walking back a mixture of people. Not a lot of infantry at that point, I don't think. Only the RBs or the Herefords, those were out there.
So you're running back across this wreck-strewn battlefield.
Yeah.
And how far did you get?
Back. We rejoined the units and they'd moved on around to the side of these woods, I suppose. Again, it was still battling on. And it battled on into the early evening.
Do you remember any more incidents?
Not really. It was just then it was a question of plugging away at whatever targets that were sorted out for you as they popped up.
Would the turret get filled with fumes from all the firing?
Oh, yeah. You've got the perpetual cordite smell inside. It pervades everything, you know.
What was it like? I mean, can you?
It's got a sort of a burning sensation in your throat. from spelling it, it pervades everything, really. It's in whatever you're wearing. But it just clings to everything. But by opening the ports and, you know, whatever, you can see it will blow away.
Did you, during this thing, did you know what you were firing at? I presume not. Or would you, I mean,
I could hear, you hear the commander would be selecting the target, and if you had the second, you could look out, along, you know, sight up what it was they were firing at, and be it a tank or the 88 field guns. Or whatever, you could get that, the gist of that, what you were potting at, and if you had a chance, you could actually view from the periscope, but you were limited in your sighting. But once they you heard a target being positioned for, you knew that the next thing you're going to need is another round, so you. And the target would denote the round you wanted, really. It was a question, if it was a Panther, you knew that was going to be an armour-piercing, so you had another one ready. Then as soon as it ejected the shell case, you wanged another one in. So you were more occupied, probably.
Was it physically tiring?
It could be, and I think because we'd spent the night changing the engine and that, we started off deadbeat anyway, I guess. But there must be something that keeps you going, because you didn't feel totally drained until, I think, when we formed up in the harbour at night. And then I think the wave hit you.
Oh, come on. What about... Did you have any close escapes? Or did much hit the tank? I mean, either small arms fire or shrapnel or anything?
You got bits of shrapnel, because there was also shells coming down at the same time. Apart from the steady fire that was coming from super view directions. There was shrapnel fire a fair bit. You could hear that sort of twang on the outside. Nothing major, fortunately, and not a lot of small arms fire, I remember, really. Although I think some of the commanders would be sniped at with small arms fire, but it was small arms fire, I didn't take too much notice of, to be honest. It was the biggest stuff that you could see flashes from the guns. Different points that usually told you where they were, and then it was up to the gunner then to try and determine whether they were a tank or these self-propelled guns or self-propelled guns, as you often got. No, it's hot. Oh, you got tired. I don't know when we had a brew up here. Had anything to eat, the time just sort of rolled by.
Now, anything else before you pulled back that you remember, any incident?
No, not really.
So what about when you pulled back? I mean, you didn't get where you wanted to. How was the recall organised? Because did they take the woods or not?
We went round them, certainly round them. I think the tactical side of it, you don't really see, although you see it, but you don't recognise it. It felt at the time we were throwing ourselves at a very solid brick wall, and there didn't appear to be any real give in it. As soon as you cleared one bit, the firing started from another bit just alongside it. it seemed perpetual. But you were moving either once, not head on, but around, trying to get around things. You don't get the overall picture. You only see the little fragment that you're really looking at, and as the loader operator, you don't look at an awful lot. You hear it more than you see it.
Who would order the return? Would that come from?
You get like an order to hold the position or move in to a spot like into the trees where you could observe beyond it. But you are sort of on a standing brief, as it were. You're holding on, and then as it darkened and the rest of it, they would then get you to pull back or form up to a set lava point.
Now, where did you? I think you went back to the starting point, didn't you? Back to Ranville.
Virtually, yeah, we had a ride back. It might well have been exactly. It's more or less where we left. All I remember is the trot back. And then climbing out the turret, and then looking at what was then the remnant of the regiment. They tell me there were 9 vehicles there. And when I climbed out, I think there were about 5, and some more turned up later.
How did you react to that?
I was absolutely staggered when you looked at what would have been the 4 lines. Vehicles normal to find this big hole. It was staggering. Some more came along afterwards, I'm sure, but not very many. The thought was at that point you just can't carry on at this rate. It just couldn't. It was not possible, I would have thought.
Had you lost many friends?
Yeah, I did lose a fair few, although you didn't realise at that time. It was at the echelon when they come up with the fuel and ammunition, that you could ask them if any of they'd heard any, because some had managed to get back. But the whole conversation really was, have you seen Smudger or so-and-so? No, it was pretty traumatic, I suppose, would be the best word for it. But the echelon people were looking for their mates, the same as you were looking for yours.
What about your old crew, Bush's crew?
They were still good, I think.
So you'd been rather lucky in one way, you know what I mean?
Lucky, yeah.
Were you aware of luck at the concert at the time?
Yeah, it must be, there must be an element of luck in this, where the one next to you goes down and you stay up. There is a luck, or a divine, somebody up there has got a hand on you, I don't know, but there is an element of luck. There's all sorts of elements come into this, and you're just thankful that you got through the day. But you then start this feeling that, will I see this tomorrow? Because the casualties were so heavy that you wondered, what will tomorrow bring? But I think that night, quite honestly, we were so whacked out. I don't think we even put the video up that night. We just sort of, you just fell on the, curled up on the turret floor or whatever it was, or draped over the breech of the gun or something.